it was way, way later that I, in my heart, had to make the painful decision, yes, I have to consider them as dead. It was, I don't know how long, maybe years after a while, maybe 2 years or more, even, when I made that decision.
Did you say courage then?
By that time, I was already getting so unorthodox that I didn't believe in that anymore. And I went after the war was over, after a certain number of days I stayed with the farmer. There was some bandying about that I would find it, some work and somewhere to stay in that area. I couldn't even make a decision, yes or no. I felt completely ambivalent about anything at that time. But I did go, I found a way to get to Amsterdam. I came to my parents' house, and there were people living there, the same as on the first, the lowest two floors, those two ladies had lived. In our place, other people had been evacuated from a place that was inundated, and they told me that when they came in, they found like shards, pieces of cantoral wrappers that had been thrown down and were considered of no value. But they gave me part of a talit of my father, silver embroidered, I don't know what the technical term for it would be, and I don't know where it is now, but also a Megillat Esther on a parchment, on leather. And I gave this to my uncle here, who is still Orthodox, and he has that. Very beautiful, made in hand, of obviously handwritten in Poland. These were the only things that were left there. All the other things had been stolen from the hiding place between the floors. Those that got hold of it, they had much easier than we had, because we had to go on ladders and reach the spot from below between the two floors. They just opened the floor on the floor above, and everything was easily accessible from there. Do you want to know anything about after the war?
Sure.
I was adopted by a, in quotes, adopted by a Jewish family from Poland, who said that they knew my parents. I didn't know them. And
from Tarnow?
They were from Poland.
Where?
I don't know where from Poland, but they had lived before the war in Amsterdam. They had known my father. I was there alone. I went there to the Polish Shield, the Polish synagogue, where they went, and they offered me to stay with them. I became like a member of their family. During Yom Kippur of 1946, I found, or before that, I found out that there were Jewish Canadian soldiers who needed someone to serve as a cantor for the holidays, and it was already after Yom Rosh Hashanah, but they needed to be someone for Yom Kippur. There were two chaplains, one was from Canada, the other was from New York, and I contacted them, and they made me sing, and they asked me how much you want. I mentioned off the top of my head a high figure, 600 guilders, and they on the spot agreed to it. So I led the service as a cantor for the Jewish Canadian soldiers in the world famous concert Gebouw, which is the concert hall for the famous concert. And I also blew the shofar then, which I'd never done before. I learned it in a jiffy. And one of the fringe benefits was that before leading the service, I could sleep in the quarters which were part of the Jewish chaplaincy or whatever. And I got their food before Yom Kippur, and after Yom Kippur I never got their food there too, because I was not going to drive there or ride there from where I lived. So I stayed there overnight over Yom Kippur. And I remember during the service that I saw some flashlights. And I'm going really way off on a tangent. In 1979, I met a lady in Jerusalem in the Plaza Hotel whose husband was one of those two chaplains. And she got hold of the pictures, and I have them here, where it is shown that I was there as a cantor. Though it was many years later that I got there.
Let me just stop you for a second. Do you remember what went through your mind as you davened that day? what was going through your mind as you conducted that service?
I'm sure I thought about my relatives. That's one of the things we're referring to. I felt I was stepping my father's footsteps, who had been the chief cantor, and I was, in fact, I was singing as best as I could remember the melodies that he was using during his service.
What were your feelings at that point about surviving?
About surviving?
You said you were very, last time too, you said you were very depressed.
I was very depressed. I was offered around that time by someone to go back to the study of medicine. The offer was, I would say, extremely gracious. I knew they meant it, but I was in no mental condition to go back to study at that time. And what I was doing at that time was the following. In the Polish Shiel, where I went to, by the way, the great synagogue was unusable. The wood had been removed from it and wouldn't be used. So I went to the Polish Shiel, and I met there someone who was a Hungarian Jew, and he knew that I was without any income, and I was looking for work, because I didn't want just to be living there, supported by others without doing anything. So he had a factory of bookbinding, and I started working there. He taught me the tricks of the trade of bookbinding. It was called cartonnage, because carton was used for the binding the books. And this was, by the way, also the first job that I did when I came to Palestine and tried to make a living.
I guess I'm curious to know if you felt happy to have survived. If you were.
I don't think I had any feelings about it at that time. I felt much more depressed than happy. I knew it was the right thing that I was doing, but it was not the way I had hoped for. Because this was this was, let's say, short of being killed myself, this was one of the worst options that I had to go through life alone, at least during quite a few years, until I got married, let's say.
What happened from there?
Pardon?
What happened?
Yes. In this Polish synagogue, I met an older brother of the 18-year-old boy who went with me in hiding the second time when I fled. And I told him about it.
And the 18-year-old had gone back to Western.
He did not return. And there's another thing. The first few weeks and so after the war, I had no source of income. I was given a chance to make some money by selling lists of survivors. The Jewish newspaper, some of the people, they had restarted it, and one of the things that they were printing were lists of Jews that had come back to Holland from the concentration camps. So it gave me a chance to know first, and if the first thing I was doing, of course, was looking for a family name, mm-hmm. and then to sell to others. And I made probably not bad money, because I guess I looked so depressed, people must have had pity upon me. Because I remember at one time that it was going better than I expected. It was selling like hotcakes. At that time I noticed, on the subject of not being able to go back to medicine, I had noticed psychologically a difficulty of remembering nouns. I have no idea whether it was malnutrition or the psychological stress and trauma, but I had difficulty remembering nouns, and I would be inclined to enlarge it and say anything that had to do with anything before the war. In other words, it was so nice then, and now it was so less nice. Therefore, I was again, as a shielding protective mechanism, I was unable to remember. It was psychologically too painful. And in the process, probably I didn't remember names of simple objects. And I had to almost relearn it.
Not just names of people and places.
Just names of objects. This was another consideration why I felt that no, I if I go back to learn, I have a hard time remembering anything. How can I learn medicine? How can I study medicine? I also had the difficulty, which I had for quite a while, I would say maybe several years after the war, not at all times, but from time to time, difficulty talking to other people. And this was, it was a almost like a chore. It was extremely difficult for me. The way I understood it was that I was so angry at the world, in quotes, for letting this to happen, that I was angry at anyone, and therefore I did not feel like I had to talk to anyone or wanted to talk.
Did you ever express that to anyone?
Not at that time. In fact, with 20/20 hindsight, I definitely could have benefited from psychotherapy. I didn't even know that there was such a thing possible. I'm now in a position to help lots of depressed people.
You think that has something to do, your state after the war might have something to do with your choice of profession?
I did not get it.
Do you think that this depression that you were in after the war might have had some influence on your choice of a profession?
Very well possible. Very well possible. Like the commercial goes, doing what we do best, when I was in medical school, one of the things that I must have done, I understand now with 2020 understanding, was when I had to do a model record on a psychiatric patient, and this was a process that took several weeks. I cured him in the process, I believe. So I knew I was doing very well on that. This is probably my
You made your way to Israel eventually, or to Palestine.
Yes.
How did that happen?
I joined after war the Agudat Yisrael, or more precisely, Poale Agudat Yisrael. That means the working, the labor arm of the very Orthodox movement, being still Orthodox myself at that time. And one day I heard one of the other activists there, the leaders there, saying that so-and-so had gone to left Holland to go to Palestine, and say, when did you tell me? He said, we didn't know you were interested. And it was just a matter of days before I was given the information, and I was put on my route through Antwerp, Paris, and the Mediterranean. By the way, I am written up in other people's books. The episode when I went from the theater to the nurse's dorm to spend the night there is in Lisha Rose's book, The Tulips Are Red, on page 110. And then there is a very leftist American author, I.F. Stone. He went with us during that illegal boat trip from France to Palestine. And he doesn't exactly write about me in person, but I was on that boat too.
And you were in the War for Independence. Well, how did you get in?
Oh, I got there. Okay, you want to hear in detailed or more roughly description?
Detailed.
Detailed. I had a first cousin of my father living in Tel Aviv, plus a half-sister of my father was living in Kiryat Chaim, next to Haifa. When I arrived with the boat Bir Yah into Haifa, we went on a hunger strike because we were told if you are in the harbor of Haifa, you won't be counted among the monthly quota yet. So we wanted to, and we found out that if we are in athlete camp, that we would be counted. So we first, for one day, we the hunger strike, and then they took us to that athlete camp. I stayed there for 2 months. After that, I was sometime with my aunt, and then I stayed most of the time until I went into a kibbutz with my father's first cousin in Tel Aviv. And you asked about, what was your question,
how you got in and then got involved in the war.
In the war. Okay. The economic situation then got bad. So after some time, the economic situation caused by the British curfew and so on, led to it that the factory for bookbinding where I was working at that time had only worked for about 2 days out of a week. So I was looking for alternates. Now on the one hand, I did sing as a cantor in Yeshurun Synagogue on Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, Hanukkah, 1946. They paid me exactly what it cost me to pay in the hotel where I was spending the night. I was very, very disappointed there. Around the same time, I also was looking for somewhere to go, such as a kibbutz, in particular one where there would be Dutch members. So I ended up in kibbutz Kvutzat Yavne, where there were lots of Dutch Jews. I stayed there from beginning of 1947. Before the Independence War, in 47, I was one of 10 members of the kibbutz who were trained by the Haganah. We were called Palam, this is not the same as Palmach, but the same letters. We were like the local storm troops. If any action was called for, we would be sent out. We went out in front of the buses to make sure that no bombs had been planted. And also there were some actions against the neighboring Arabs who were causing trouble. We were ones who did it. So I had 10 days training altogether. And when the Independence War came, our 10 members of the Palam, plus also from other kibbutzim in the area, were all told to volunteer, and we became part of the Tzahal at that time, the beginning of Tzahal. And we saw action in several places, and one occasion, out of the 10 members of our kibbutz, one got killed, one got seriously wounded, and one got lightly wounded. So I was one of the surviving 7. And I was in Nekva at the moment that an Egyptian gun artillery shell hit the water tower and the water came streaming out. So I was there during the Independence War, various locations and at various times.
Had you decided at that point to become an Israeli citizen?
At that time I was a complete Zionist, which I am still and up to a point, and I wanted to stay there. I either would stay a member of the kibbutz, but at least I thought I would stay there. I became somewhat disillusioned later on when I found out, number one, that the chances of me finding a life partner in the kibbutz were very slim. There was just no... I tried, but it didn't work out. And also when I found out that my chances of ever becoming a doctor were completely nil if I were to stay in the kibbutz. It never entered their mind that it would be a nice investment if they had sent me to the medical school in Jerusalem at that time. In fact, when I was already married, my father-in-law, who was a physician, and at one time the president of the Kupat Cholim in Jerusalem, he tried to get me into medical school in Jerusalem, and it was just impossible, so I had to study elsewhere.
So you met your life partner in...
I met my life partner, not in the kibbutz, but in a different kibbutz after I left this one, when I already had gone out of the kibbutz. After I left the kibbutz, I served about 13 months in the Tzahal. I was ended up in the Air Force, taking care of batteries, charging batteries. They offered me to sign up, which I declined. And then I was working in the trade that I had learned when I was in the kibbutz, which was first being a plumber, installator as they call it there, and after that as an electrician. And I worked for an electric contractor in kibbutz Mishmarot, and we were working there 6 days a week, and we were eating there in the kibbutz, and one day someone said, hey, there's over there a young lady who has a sister-in-law who's from Holland. So I went up to talk, and there's this history. She became my life partner.
This is Ruth.
Right.
At what point did you decide to leave Israel?
I decided to leave Israel when my uncle offered me, okay, my uncle, he was from Poland, he had been in northern Russia during the World War II, he lost his family and children, and he ended up in Tashkent, close to China, eastern Asian part of Russia, and then he came back in the DP camps, and he ended up in Detroit because his second wife, his present wife, had a brother in Detroit by the name of Tintin Fish, which means octopus in Yiddish. So he offered me to go back to Madison. And I was about 29, and I remember that I was debating with myself, and I thought, wow, that's going to be so extremely difficult. And then I told myself, yes, but if you're going to be past it and you look back, you will think it was worthwhile. So I decided to go into it. It wasn't easy, but it was worthwhile.
This was 1952?
I went back to Madison in 1953. Actually, in 1952, I studied for 2 semesters at Wayne University. You paid attention that I did not say Wayne State. It was before it was Wayne State.
Before Wayne State.
I got even on the dean's list the second semester. The first semester I missed it because the number of credits I took was just not enough for that. In the second semester I made sure I would get on the dean's
list. You spoke English at this?
I spoke English, yes. And I went back to Amsterdam in 53 to, I was re-accepted to medical school. My exam that I had passed in 1941 of the pre-med in Amsterdam was still recognized, and I went back to medicine, and I also got married in December 53. And my two oldest children were born there.
So Ruth went with you then?
She came to Amsterdam in December from Israel. I went back from Detroit, we met in Amsterdam, and that's where we spent 6 years.
And what made you decide to come back here?
When I was here for those 2 semesters, I had liked the life here, for sure the financial part and so on, but also otherwise, and I thought that I have much more future as a physician here than in Israel.
Let me ask you a question about the present. Do your experiences during the war come back to you? And are there things that you do during a routine day or places you go past that touch off an association or a memory that interferes with them?
Hardly ever.
Was that always the case?
If you mean to ask whether I had something like nightmares or so about the war, no, I don't recall ever had those.
Well, you did mention that you felt that there was this reaction to happy occasions, which you didn't fully engage in them. And then is there always, at your son's wedding, were there some thoughts about the past in it that kept you from enjoying everything?
Yes, this is something that no one probably has observed. But then I was standing there next to the chuppah. I was crying with tears. I was thinking of my parents, how they would have felt if they had been alive now.
What about holidays? Do you still celebrate the holidays?
We celebrate the holidays, it was in the Israeli way, the secular Israeli traditional way. I do lead the Seder in a very modern version. And for example, my children, whenever they still were dependent upon me, which is still my youngest, for Hanukkah, Purim, any of the other holidays, I send them a special present to remind them of that, and designate it as such.
Tell me a little bit about your children.
My oldest child is my son. He is a lawyer now. He seems to like his practice of law, some general law. There's an office in Troy. Interesting point is that sometimes some of my patients in my practice end up with him. I do a lot of marital counseling in my office, and some of those, and they say they need a lawyer, I ask them, would you mind if I were to mention my son? Others want to do it the right way, I say you have no obligation to go to him. And so far, there are several that I've quite praised and which makes me kind of proud of him, of course.
Does he have any children?
His wife is expecting a baby in September. We got the news not that long ago.
Any other children?
My oldest daughter is in Beersheba. She is very Zionist. In fact, the decision by her to leave here came as a shock to my wife and me. She was in New York, and it was either that she would get an answer from some institutions, banks, etc., that they would offer her a job, and if not, then she would go on. And then I didn't realize that she would not, I thought she first would come back here, but from New York, she did not come back, she did not say goodbye, but she went straight to Israel. She is married now, have a granddaughter, and what shall I say about her?
What's her name?
Her name is Armonit. The name was chosen by me when my wife was still pregnant with her. And I was on my bicycle going to medical school, to the lectures, and I was passing a park with chestnut trees, which were blooming. And her name means chestnut blossom.
And what are your children's names?
My oldest is Eli. His official first name, because he changed his name, was Israel Eliyahu, which was literally the name of my father. Then when we naturalized here, he had the chance to choose a different name, and then he chose to make it Eli, to simplify it. But he knows he was named after my father, after his grandfather. My youngest child, born in Panic, is a girl, Doris, just any general name. And she's studying law. She has already received the job offer. And to my wife and my satisfaction, she will work not that far from home. She will be in Chicago only, and not in Boston or some other faraway place.
Have you told your children about experiences in the 1940s?
I have told my children some. I remember on one occasion that my oldest daughter, Monique, she interviewed me similar to what you are doing here, but in her different way. I don't remember whether she was a senior in high school or a college student at the time. But anyway, all my three children, they are, two of them graduates.
So they know what
they know
what you went through?
I would say significantly, maybe not all the details. Maybe some of the details I mentioned on this tape of the year that you might fill in some of the things, because whatever's on the tape is probably all that I can remember. There may be some not that important details that I might sooner or later remember, but nothing significant has been left out.
Just one or two more things. What was your reaction to the exhibit, the Anne Frank exhibit that's here now?
Come to think of it, first thing, guard up. Move the guard up. To have your guard, wait a minute, to have your guard down means that you are vulnerable, right?
Mm-hmm.
I made myself invulnerable. Don't let this get too close to you, because it might be psychologically unpleasant or even unbearable. And anything that has to do with this, I have to screen my feelings from this. Otherwise, I would be in tears 24 hours around the clock for indefinitely. And I would not be surprised if many other Holocaust survivors feel just like I do.
But you're participating.
Yes.
You're part of that.
But you know also that first I said yes and then I said no, because one day I was during our daily walk with my wife, I was thinking about something, and while walking in Silver Lake, tears came to my eyes. I said, oh no, I don't want that. So the answer was no at that time, and then I thought about it again and said, I don't care, let the chips fall where they may. This must be done.
Why do you think it must be done?
If it were only for the reason that there are some people that try to influence others into believing that never happened. By the way, this was also the reason why, after quite a number of years after World War II, that Lisha Rose, that she, upon her, I believe one of her children's requests, that she put her memories down in a book. The tulips are red.
Anything else you want to add to this?
I guess that's it. Oh, I could go on all the things.
Well, maybe we'll do some more. okay, maybe we could stop for today. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.